All right. We are looking at the planet Mercury. And looking first at the personifications, as if it were a being that was the epitome of only one thing, purely and merely that. And if we think of Mercury as being pure mind, not the total mind, but the concrete mind, which is the vehicle for forming thoughts, definite, concrete thoughts, beginnings and end. It's only the vehicle. That's Mercury's place. Mercury is always a servant. It is not the thinker itself. It is the means by which thoughts are developed. So it has an attitude to it, and it has a posture to it that could be called thoughtfulness. But the primary quality of the mind, the thing that describes it most, is a quality of questioning. Mystics who can read in the world of thought, which is a very different world than this world, this physical world, or even the world of desire, claim that thoughts are hollow. And they're hollow in that they basically receive the stuff of pure truth, the stuff that our intuitions are made of. And the hollowing process, which is a drawing process that draws something into a resonant kind of form, is questioning. Because when you question, you're making a vacuum. And then that vacuum is capable of being filled by truth. So a question is something to make, to hold meaning. And if you look at yourself, or if you watch yourself, what you're doing when you're thinking is, in most cases, you're asking questions. You're saying, well, could it work like this? And that drawing quality of vacuum, of a vacuum-like state, we have a name for that. It is to draw something into shape, is to deduce. So we're talking here about the power of deductions. Now there are many different beings who think, and hence there are many different kinds of thoughts. And so there is more to the mind than just a formation of thoughts. The mind is receptive in another way. It is receptive to other thoughts, meaning to say that there is a kind of mental perception. That is, you can examine someone else's thoughts. You can take them into your own mind and you can hold them. It's like a perceptive thinking. Now, mystics also claim that unlike lawyers, they're creative in a different way, thought is not a cut and dried matter. It's not a dead thing, because the truth or the life that fills a thought form is a creative power. Therefore, there is something of a kind of creativity to Mercury and to the mind. That is, if a thought is held long enough, it becomes an active creative force. A thought can change things. In fact, mystics, again, from their experience, claim that everything in the universe, including the universe itself, that is, everything in the concrete universe, begins as a thought. There are thoughts behind emotions, there are thoughts behind trees, there are thoughts behind actions, and each of these thoughts is a living thing. So we get the whole idea here of Mercury as a facilitator. Mercury holds things in common with everything else in the cosmos. It has that original thought. And therefore, a person who is in touch with the mercurial consciousness is someone who can be in touch with almost anything that they want to be in touch with. course, for some people, that being in touch is a matter of reading, and they are encyclopedic in their consciousness, and they're not in touch by pure thinking, but they're doing it through studiousness, but that's all right, too. Now, thoughts, as we just said, are forms. And there is something imaginative in thinking. Now, the Mercury is not a planet of imagination. It doesn't see the visual form. But in conjunction with planets that are imaginative, it helps those forms to be made. So even though there is some imagination connected with Mercury, you wouldn't say that this is a visual person. You wouldn't say that this is a person that has big round loops in the upper part of their handwriting, which is a highly imaginative person. So when you're looking at Mercury in a chart and you're trying to feel or you're trying to intuit, there are certain things that you can intuit by focusing on Mercury. How one thinks. Some people think more inductively than deductively, and they usually happen to be people who have Mercury in positive signs rather than negative signs. What a person thinks about. I have it in Scorpio, so you know what I think about. I have it in the third house, so I think about communication. That's the correct answer. How do you say things? How do you get things across? If Mercury is very active, by tuning in on Mercury, you can tell the likelihood of a person to using the mind. You can also tell in what way the person will delineate or reason. And the kinds of questions a person asks, or how a person solves problems, how are mental images formed, and someone's ability to figure things out, the way they figure things out. But you cannot tell intelligence from the horoscope. You can't say that this person is more intelligent than that person. There's nothing in the science of astrology that does that. However, if you're very intuitive and you use the horoscope as a vehicle to home in on somebody and tune in on their consciousness, you can say that somebody, ooh, this is somebody that has a whopping strong mind, stronger than my own. So the only way I'll be able to get through to this person is through intuition, because if there is any kind of mental conflict, I'm going to come off the worse for it. Now, these thought forms that are empty and hollow, when they have the vibrant life of truth in them, ring. And they are what constitute the music of the spheres. The music of the spheres is really thoughts. And since the archetypal thoughts that create the planets and their place in the cosmos are very important thoughts, thought by divinity, those are the thoughts that one is most likely to hear. Anybody who has the ability to hear anybody else think can certainly read the memory, they can read the music of the spheres. So this is why we have a lot of phrases in our language that talk about this vibratory quality of Mercury and sound. We say something sounds true, or we say that something has the ring of truth. And people who are fast thinkers and fast talkers, we call them pitch people or pitch men, because they are always delivering their pitch. And it isn't like pitch in a baseball, it's tonal pitch. This brings up a story that we didn't bring up with the sun. The sun plays a lyre. It's a stringed instrument. And the creativity of the string, or the musical quality of the string, is positive. It sets up and pushes out sound waves. whereas the thought forms are receptive. They're empty. They're hollow, like a flute or something like that, and they vibrate by receiving something from a positive source. In our case, that positive source is the thinker. And this was indicated that the thoughts are concrete. And the concrete world was ruled by Pan. And the sun relates, as we said, to the spiritual worlds. And the spiritual worlds are positive and creative. And this is where the myth of Pan and Apollo comes in. They had a contest about who made the more beautiful music, the music of heaven or the music of earth. And they decided to find somebody to judge the contest of music. And they could only find one person stupid enough to judge the music contest. And that was Midas. Hadn't learned his lesson after turning his daughter and everything else into gold, he still hadn't learned that he was still stupid. And so he judged the music contest. And because he was earthly and because he was concrete, that music was more appealing to him than the music of Apollo, because that was so celestial and so spiritual he couldn't appreciate it. And so he declared Pan the winner. And Apollo was not going to have this, because Apollo knew that his music was superior. So he punished Midas by giving him ass's ears. And forever after, King Midas wore a turban so that nobody could see. But he did have to have his hair cut. And so the barber was sworn to silence, to never tell a single person that Midas had ass's ears. But he couldn't hold it in. So what he did is he went to a place that nobody goes to. He went down near the swamp, and he dug a hole in the ground, and he whispered into it, "Midas has ass's ears." He covered it up and went away, and he felt relieved. And then the reeds grew up in that spot. And when the wind blew through the reeds, the wind is blown by Apollo, when the wind blew through the reeds started whispering, "Midas has ass's ears." But that's the quality of Mercury. It is a receptive planet. It receives. It's capable of asking questions and producing its own vacuousness, but that doesn't mean that it isn't receptive. Another personification of Mercury is the whole nervous system, including the brain and the senses. The senses collect information. The nervous system relays information. The nervous system isn't the motion itself, but it carries the stimuli to set the muscles in motion. So it has this whole quality of receiving things, receiving thoughts from the mind. We're talking about the brain now, not the mind. They're two very different things. And carrying things out through the muscles by giving impulses. So all of these are mercurial function. Sensing. We're not talking about feeling, we're talking about sensation, something that uses the nerves. And all of the information that is brought in through sensory use, stimulation, and some kind of excitation. Talk about excitation, here she comes. You've just been made famous. My favorite wild Aries person. Oh, your parents were there, huh? And they were glad to hear that their daughter was going to astrology classes. They did, really. Wow, you got pretty wide open parents. They're from Manitowoc? happy birthday. Well, that's why the parents are okay. So Mercury then represents a pure neural being. It's an axion ready to be fired off. It's that kind of, it's always, my friends, because I have Virgo rising and have a very strong Mercury, when I was young, I used to be like a pure neural impulse, and my friends used to call me Twitchard instead of Richard. And that's exactly what it is. It gives these impulses and it communicates. But one of the greatest illusions of all humanity is that the mind can make decisions. A rational decision is an oxymoron. The mind can collect information and it can see different options and it can organize the information. But if you ask the mind to do something or to make a decision on something, it's like Congress. It orders another study and it wants more information, it wants more knowledge, and says, so it's great for feeding the information to the spirit so that the spirit can make an intuitive or a willful decision, but it should not be the decision maker itself. Then there are people who live by their mind. In our common language, they're called intellectuals. Mercury is the planet of intellectuals. Mercury indicates how much one is going to use their mind. And there are things that intellects discuss. Julie can tell us all about them, about the way different people think. And they make a whole big study. It's called rhetoric, of the way people intellectually do things. It's their mental style. Mercury is not without style, but it's an intellectual style. It is a planet of literacy. It is a planet of literature. And it is a planet that knows just enough about the subjects of literature to get a person to think that they know that the mercurial person knows that. It's as though Mercury knew everything. This has been known all the way back to the times of Plato. Plato used to be angry with poets. He loved their intuitive insights. But he says they make it look as if they know everything because they can allude to things in their poems with a few little words, and they really don't know those things. Only the philosophers know things, because only the philosophers can put things in terms that are so abstract that nobody else can understand them. So they say we're the only ones who know them. I'm in a feisty, light mood tonight. Also, the conscious use of the mind intellectually and in other ways in activities like the intellectual memory. Not the pictorial, not the photographic memory, or not the memory of nature, but the memory that is mercurial, that does things by association. This is associated with this, or it does things by mnemonics, or things of that nature. It is more like recollection. It puts things together and it reproduces something and it knows something that way. Woe be unto the person who tries to get Mercury to hold on to everything. Even the ones that are really knowledge vacuums don't hold on to everything, but they like the ability to reassemble it. It's more efficient that way, and the mind really likes that. So it pieces things together. It is a memory of that kind of nature that associates things and puts pieces in and will even hypothetically put things into the picture until the memory comes back clearly. Now, if you want to see a personification of Mercury that is more human-like, even though a human is said to be a thinker, the servant is a personification of Mercury. The mind is the closest vehicle to the spirit, and therefore is the closest and most vital servant of the spirit. It is the lens with the light of spirit or the light of truth, even as we know it as the will to live. That will to live is focused through the lens of mind and into the thought form that forms our bodies and our lives. So the mind is the focus of the self. It is the focus of the thinker. And sometimes people think that the mind is the self. It really is not, at least not the concrete mind. So the whole idea here is who serves with the least amount of self, that is, who is the most transparent, who is the most agile, is the best servant. And Mercury has the quality of neutrality. That's the only way it can communicate all the things that it does, is by being as neutral as it is. Because that way it can associate itself with almost anything and be able to get the information that it wants or needs from it without having to be like it or without there having to be antagonism. So it has that neutral thing. There are people that are like that, you know, that you talk to them because they're so neutral that you know you're always going to get fair answers and you're going to get impersonal information. And that's a Mercury kind of individual. The servant doesn't, you know, there was that excellent book that was out about 10 years ago, written by the Japanese man in England that wrote The Servant. The servant was not allowed to have his own opinion. His opinions were the opinions of the master. And that makes for the perfect kind of, because if you can anticipate what the master needs or what is going to be needed in every situation, then you're a very excellent servant. But if you've got a thing that you're going to do things your way, which is not Mercury, then you're not capable of really serving. So the ability to facilitate or to accommodate or to carry out, all of those are notions of Mercury, a personification of Mercury as the servant. These are what servants do all the time. It identifies itself in that way. It doesn't want to be identified with anything else except as a servant. This is why there are always such close ties between Mercury and the Sun. They're usually always in the same sign, and there are difficulties when they're not in the same sign because the mind thinks differently than the master wants it to think. I had a friend that was a spiritual student, and we were very dear friends, and she was born a year and one or two days apart from me, and we had perfectly matching horoscopes, and she tried very hard to be a spiritual philosopher, but because her Mercury was in Sagittarius, it came out like academic philosophy, and it didn't have that spiritual quality to it. It was really interesting to see that. Honesty. Mercury is the personification of honesty or dishonesty. That same kind of neutrality is there. However, in the case of honesty, there is an identification with the truth. And the integrity of the mind is if it is bearing the truth. And therefore, mercurial people do not like to be impugned with the title of being dishonest. That's just not them at all. They ask themselves questions. Am I being clear? Are my thoughts true? Am I being truthful all around? Is my representation faithful? Those kinds of things. Mercury indicates how the mind identifies itself with truth and how it identifies itself with the expression of truth. For example, I have Mercury in a watery sign, and my thoughts are as much feeling as they are thinking. When I'm thinking, I get excited. Some people, when they think, they get really quiet and such, but I have an excitement. And even after years and years of discipline, I can keep it from being too much emotional excitement. But still, the experience of having new thoughts is exciting to me. And the fact that they're new and that I've never thought them before, in some cases maybe no one has ever thought them before, but I have these things happen all the time that I think I'm having original thoughts. And someone will come along and say, oh, Rudolf Steiner said that, or somebody else was, you know, I've been having a lot of that with Plotinus. That means some of my original thoughts are 1,400 years old. Mercury is the personification of communication, not expression. Expression has too much character to it. Expression is of Leo and the fifth house. And the character of the individual always comes through. Communication is best if there is no character to it. I can remember when I went through my divorce, we went through couples communication counseling. And it was like you said something, but you never said anything about the other person. You spoke only about your experiences and how you feel. And you checked with the other person. It's just like working with a, you know, like a two-way radio set. You say, over, and you say, do you read me? And that kind of thing. It was excellent. It was done by a Gemini, too. The counselor was a triple Gemini. And that made it a very nervous affair. But communication is like that. You always check things out. Because Mercury will go running off if it doesn't have checks. And if you're communicating, you have to know that the stuff is really getting through. So people who are communicators are people who are skilled at that. And they are, again, middle people. Sometimes they can be interpreters. Or sometimes they're salespeople. Or sometimes they're panderers. Or sometimes they are gossips, or sometimes they are agents or brokers or something like that. But it is someone who can bring a thought to your mind. And that thought does not have to be true. Any salesman can tell you that they don't necessarily have to sell, they don't have to tell the truth in selling a product. They're more likely to sell if the customer gets a thought and they recognize that thought as true in its existence, not necessarily true in what it points to in reality. And for most people, if somebody is a skilled thinker, they present a thought, and because the presentation is so clear, they feel it has to be true whether it is true or not. And this is the way communication works. It is you can take what you have and you want to give to another person, and you can bring it to them so clearly that they can't help but to see things that way, or at least to know that. It's even the, as the personification of communication, Mercury is even the great articulator. It knows how to put words together, either in a rhythmic way or in a way that is suggestive, or in a way that produces pictures. In this, it excites in a different way, not emotionally excites, but it acts as a catalyst. A lot of people, when they go into the store, by the very fact they're going into the store, they want to buy something. Otherwise, they wouldn't go in the store. You know, I don't want to buy something. I stay home all the time. I stay out of the stores. That's where people who spend money. You know, I'm a cheapskate. I don't want to spend money. But the salesperson knows this. The salesperson knows they want to buy something. And if they can get the, if they can be a catalyst so that they can help the customer externalize that maybe not too completely conscious urge to buy something, maybe even if the buying is for just, you know, to feel better about themselves because they own something, that happens quite a bit. But the agent or the salesperson is a catalyst. They bring things, they bring something about without being part of the whole action. You know, like the store owner gets the money, the customer gets the product, and that has all been facilitated by the salesperson who is the catalyst, who doesn't really enter into that equation of money one way and product another way. All right, it indicates, Mercury as the personification of communication indicates how exchanges are performed, the kinds of tools and skills that the person will have. For example, Mercury in an earthy sign might do things briefly and in a staccato fashion. Mercury in a fiery sign, you run into them on the internet all the time. They know how to flame you in their communications. All right. Another personification of Mercury, and this is probably the most universal everywhere in the world. Mercury is the trickster. Because any thought form that is produced will carry some truth, even the truth of the being that created it, whether it is true to greater reality or whether it has objective truth or not is quite another matter. And therefore, the mind can play tricks on you, or by coming to conclusions or making assumptions because something carries a little bit of truth that you think it is true, it isn't the mind that's playing a trick on you, but that's the way we tend to put it into words. So Mercury represents what in all societies is the trickster. And the trickster is usually one of the chief facilitators of the mysteries. That is, the spiritual mysteries through which one transforms one's consciousness. And it works in such a way that most people have assumed what they think reality is. And most people have died, at least in a thought life, very early on, and the more they become civilized, and the more they become conventional, the less thoughtful they become. And if someone is to be initiated into a new kind of consciousness, they have to become a different person, and they have to be open to different kinds of thinking. And that is why the Hierophant is very often a mercurial trickster. That trickster uses ruses and sly ways to get a person jogged out of their old way of thinking, and even if it's a con, to get them to think another way, because once they're doing something in a different way, the mind opens up and they can see things in quite a radically different way. But the mercurial character is twinkly-eyed, and it does like playing its pranks and doing its tricks. Robin Goodfellow in Midsummer Night's Dream is a perfect example of Mercury personified. Then there's a personification that is usually not liked, and that is the liar or the thief. That's a special kind of trickster. That is someone who intentionally produces thought forms or communications that make you think something is one way in order to accept something that they want you to accept, whether it is true or not true, and usually it is not true. And this can be done by the same thing that gives Mercury its facility as a servant, and that is through its neutrality. Because it is neutral, it can tell the lie. It can even fool a lie detector. If you don't have anything emotionally at stake, if you're just cool about it, you've got that mercurial kind of consciousness, you can tell a lie, and it's not bad to you. It's an expedient. Mercury likes expedients. They like whatever is convenient and whatever they can use. For that matter, owning something is an arbitrary thing. You know, just because you have your name on the title, that's just a sheet of paper. Whenever there are those kinds of thinkings, Mercury's always behind it. I can remember back in the 60s when people were say, why get married? That's just a sheet of paper. Well, if your commitment is that great that you don't need a sheet of paper signing, it shouldn't make any difference. But it's that kind of thinking that what's yours is mine. Anything can be communicable from one person to another, and it doesn't necessarily have to go through the normal channels. It can go through channels that are not necessarily honest. You know, when you start getting down that way of thinking, you know, it's a pretty easy path to follow. And that path of following is, again, a Mercury term. It's called rationalization. Probably the most famous rationalization of lying came from Euripides. And it was in the Medea. I forget who it was that said it. I think it was maybe Jason. I'm not certain, but he says, it wasn't I, but my tongue that lied. Now, then there's the matter of white lies. Now, Mercury people have no trouble justifying a white lie. I don't know. I have a hard time with lies of any kind, but Mark Twain, in his short stories, tells the story of these two maiden aunts who have been left with the charge of their nephew. And the nephew is dying. They don't know that yet. But the doctor, who is sort of a crusty, hardened, man-of-the-world kind of doctor, curses and he lies and things like that. And in their religiosity, they always chide him for doing things like that. You know, like it's a sin to lie, they tell him. And then the young man gets sick, and the doctor tells them that his illness is terminal. He only has a very short time to live, and they should try and make it as pleasant as possible for him as long as he's going to live. And then he just steps back and watches until the boy dies of the great extremes and the lies that the loving little old ladies tell the boy in order for him to have a peaceful, comfortable last few weeks while he's alive. And the way Mark Twain tells it is really great. It didn't convince me yet, but it caused me to think of it as a potential option. One of the ways of lying is the way Mercury works. It's again one of the communicational things. Each person has their tone of thinking, each person's mind has its own keynote, then you should be able to pick up that person. Like when you read a person's mind, it sounds like their voice. And their voice has that timbre to it because it derives it from the spirit working through the mind, through the keynote of the mind. And therefore, if you want to think like another person, what you do is you imitate them or you impersonate them. And that is how I learned how to think. I had a friend that was a composer of music, and he was a really far out beatnik kind of guy, and I loved him dearly, dearly. And I was in my early 20s, I hadn't really had a true creative thought. But somehow, by seeing the way he thought, I impersonated. And I screwed my mind into such a place that I was able to produce a thought form that I had original thought. I can take you right to the spot. It's on Bascom Hill. This man has never been in Madison, Wisconsin, but I was sitting on Bascom Hill up behind the education building up there where that twisty road goes up. And I was sitting there, and I had my first original thought there, and it was one of the most wonderful experiences of my entire life. I, of course, went back to sleep in stupidity for a while after that, but eventually I caught on. I don't even remember it anymore. I just remember the experience. Just remember the experience. And that's. I felt that. I knew it didn't come from anywhere else but inside of me. It had the ring of intuition. Now, since thought forms are active, and since they are creative, lies have a very special effect. If there is a thought form, a true thought about Julie, and there is a false thought about Julie, both of them will be brought together. And whichever one is the strongest is the one that will win out, even though both will be harmed. This is why lies are called both murders and suicides, because they murder the truth that they intend to displace, but in so doing they spend all of their own energy. Usually the reality, the thought that has produced the reality, is stronger and wins out, so that if you think that you can turn Saturn into a meek little lamb by thinking thoughts about Saturn that are all sweetness and love, it isn't going to work, because that's a thought form that's very, very strong. It's intense that way. Now, earlier we talked about the posture of thinking, of questioning, of drawing in, either through perception or through thinking in such a way that a vessel is produced that carries the truth. Now, that posture has a characteristic that is all of its own, and that characteristic is mercurial. Mercury is the personification of curiosity. That there is something about anything or something about everything that is knowable. And this is pure curiosity. This isn't necessarily for one's own ends. That neutrality, there is an excitement, a mental excitement, not an emotional excitement, of knowing things and of acquiring knowledge. And that is what curiosity is in that pure sense. That's what Mercury represents. It represents that ability of the mind and its owner, the spirit, to tune in on anything and know anything. And for the spirit wanting to know itself and wanting to know the entire cosmos, that is the personification of Mercury. All right, the symbol of Mercury. And this time we have a new element. With the sun, we had the circle. We said that the circle was spirit. It was without beginning, without end. With Mercury, we had the circle and the cross. And that the cross represented materialization. Through the right-hand law, it is how things are solidified. But here we have a new element, and that new element is the semicircle, which is sort of spiritual, but isn't spiritual. You could say it's half spiritual. And rather than being self-contained like the spirit is, it reflects, or it focuses and projects. What we're talking about is soul, in a very loose use of the word. Soul as being everything between the spirit and matter. So Mercury has the semicircle at the top. So it is preeminent. Matters of conduction of truth or sense perception or something like that is more important than the spirit itself. Its whole being is to have that life of soul feeding the spirit. Now, because the semicircle is like this, it shows Mercury as being receptive. And it shows Mercury as being receptive to that which comes from above. That is the source of truth that is in the spirit. If Mercury were only a perceptor and only did things by perception, it would be something like this. The semicircle would be pointing down, and it would be receiving from the direction of the earth. So, that ability to be between spirit and matter is best carried out through the mind. It is dependent. It's not self-sufficient, and it needs the mind, and it needs grounding in matter. And that very clearly describes Mercury. In mythology, in the Greeks and Romans, Greeks called it Hermes, and the Romans called it Mercury. He's a son of Zeus, and he's very precocious. On the first day after he's born, he steals the cattle of his brother Apollo. And he's clever enough to get away with them. He puts the shoes on the cattle backwards, so it looks like they're going the opposite direction from which they came. And then he takes them out of sight. He takes them and puts them in a cave where the sun doesn't know. However, he can't keep quiet about things, and his own characteristic gets him in trouble. Rumor tells where the cattle are hidden. And Apollo comes walking into the cave where Mercury is with the cattle, and he's just finishing a meal of roast beef. Yeah. And he offers some to Apollo, and Apollo is outraged. But Mercury is a quick thinker and a quick talker, and he buys himself time by reaching over to where there's a turtle shell laying there. And he takes and he strings guts across that, and he creates the lyre for Apollo. He says, see, look what you can do with this, and you can make all of this. But eventually, Apollo prosecutes him, and they go before the ultimate judge, their father, Zeus Pater. That is Father Zeus, and he's the judge. That's where the word Jupiter comes from, is from Zeus Pater. And he gets off by giving Zeus the pipes that he has just invented, the Pan's pipes. And he not only gets off on the charge, but he's given gifts. He's given the caduceus of Mercury, which makes him Lord of the Mysteries and Lord of Medicine and all of those things. That's the symbol with the ball with wings and two serpents on the rod. And he becomes the guardian of the mercurial mysteries. Zeus also rewards him and makes him the god of treaties and of commerce and of promoters and people like that. He has many, many different adventurers with all kinds of beings, human and divine and everything in between. He loves to go strolling and wandering with his father Zeus, and they always have great fun when they do so. With Prometheus, he devises the means for bringing fire to earth, but he's never punished for it. Prometheus is. He invents all kinds of things. He invents divination, language, astronomy, the musical scale, boxing, wrestling, gymnastics, weights and measures, and the mysteries, and of course healing. He has a son who is quite famous and who is everything that is bad from him. The son is called Autolycus. And probably one of the best portrayals of Autolycus is in The Winter's Tale by Shakespeare. Autolycus is a character. He's a salesman, and he cheats, and he steals, and he's treasonous, and he does everything he can. And it's the whole litany of mercurial sins Autolycus has. He gets into mischief with Sisyphus and all sorts of other people, and he becomes the patron of thieves, and he invents bribery. And it's worth seeing Winter's Tale just for the sake of seeing Autolycus, a fun kind of person. In Northern European mythology, Zeus or Jupiter is not the chief of the gods. That is given to Mercury. And in the north, he's called Wotan or Odin, depending on how far north you go. And he's again called the Wanderer. He's the chief of the gods, and he rules over everything by having a throne very high up in the Yggdrasil tree. And he's the grand overseer of things. But he's morbid. He's got that Nordic doom about him, and he's gloomy all the time. And that's an excellent portrayal of Mercury in the Nordic sense of it. A person, you find it on the university among these very brilliant people, they think it's fashionable to be negative about things and to be skeptical, but they let the head get so far ahead of the heart that when that happens, the Woden temperament comes out. A person who has the head way ahead of the heart is a sad, dark kind of person. And they have a name for that now. It's something about sun deprivation. I forget the name. What? Yeah, seasonal affective disorder. He has two ravens. One is forethought and one is afterthought, and one is coming in as the other one is going out. And he knows everything that's going out. He unites with his sister Erda and produces the Welsungs, which are the race of truth seekers. He's a cogitator. Mercurial people, or pure Mercury, loves to think. They can get into that thing with really fast thinking, and unfortunately, IQ tests are made for fast thinkers, as if speed were more important than truth. And that's just not the way it is. There are some people that are slow thinkers that are very intelligent. You don't have to be just fast. And you can train the mind to put it on something so that it never lets go. Mercury-Pluto people are like that. Once the mind is on something, it never lets go. It's like, what do they call that, a steel jaw trap or something like that. So it is a sign that can be a planner, but it can cogitate. It can just draw thoughts together and draw them together on one central theme, and that is an excellent characteristic for Mercury because it has both the concentration in which the mind excels and it has the drawing power of cogitation. And is this going too slow? I guess it probably is. He's the writer of the laws, and he's weakened by the process of it. And there's one that I don't know the character of very much, but in India it's called Bud, B-U-D. Well, the Sharad would probably pronounce it Bud. Bud? B-U-D-H. Yeah, O-D-H. That's why I left the H out in my notes here. It's the planet of direct communication. And that form of direct communication, if it's divine, is called divination. And in the East, it's called the truth bearer. And that's an excellent use for Mercury because that's what the mind does as a servant. And we've already talked about all the tricksters. Now we're to the part that's most important. Every planet represents one or more people in your life, and every person in your life represents one or more people, one or more planets. So who are the planetary figures in your life? One obviously is the Mercury people in life are the people who make you think. I have a thing that my Mercury is square to Jupiter in the fifth house. And I always get with quizzical children. And the I met a sweet little girl when I was in Chile in February. She said, if you don't come out here and play with me, she was a little Aries, today is her birthday of all things. Her name is Camilla. And she says, if you don't come out here and play with me, she says, I'm going to come in there and grab you by the ears and pull you out here. But I run into children who are quizzical. I've already mentioned the example of the person who helped me to have my first thought. I learned to plagiarize the thought process. Eventually, I got my own thinking voice, but there still is a little bit of my friend Jimmy in me. And then there are people that you pick up their way of thinking by induction. I worked, my career was as a computer, not operator, but systems administrator, and for a while I was a programmer. And I worked with two super programmers. That's what they used to call them in those days. And I learned how to pick up knowledge inductively from the way other people thought. When you got their idea of how they formed or wrote their code out, it was easier to crack their code when you had to debug it later on or modify it or something like that. And so they were people who brought me to understand inductive thinking. And then there are people who argue with us. I have a friend that lives in Sun Prairie who's a genius. He's got something like, he must easily have a 500,000 word vocabulary, and he knows how to use it. He was a master teacher. But he is my mercurial antagonist. And it's happened many times. Any of you familiar with Plato's dialogues? There is one called The Sophist, in which Socrates is arguing with Protagoras, is the name of the man. And Protagoras is a sophist who pretends to know knowledge but really doesn't. And they're arguing about the fact that the sophist says that you can teach knowledge. And Socrates doesn't believe that you can teach knowledge. And so they go through this dialogue, and somewhere in the middle they cross. And by the end of the dialogue, Protagoras not only doesn't believe that you can't teach knowledge, he's sure that he doesn't have any knowledge because Socrates has really put him in his place. Socrates comes to the conclusion that you can teach knowledge, but he doesn't know who's capable of it, which is a typical Socrates. And my friend Richard and I get into that. We've had it happen several times that we start at opposite points in a conversation, and we cross over in the middle, and we end up where the other one was all the time. I haven't been in touch with him for a while. People who get us to see things in different ways. I worked with a physicist who was just brimful of knowledge, and he does this to the other physicists. They'll bring up, well, why don't we do the experiment this way? And he'll bring up five or six other ways that it could be done that they haven't even thought of at all. It's Sridhara. Very, very bright, very knowledgeable man. And then there are arguers. I have Mercury in Scorpio, which is a somewhat argumentative sign. And there was that woman that I talked about earlier that all of our life we argued. We argued right down to just about the last day of her life. I went to visit her. I drove all the way to Alabama nonstop to see her before she died. And she had a huge brain tumor. And she was weak and she was on the way out. But she wanted me to argue in proxy for her with her sister. Because she thought I could convince her sister of living a more spiritual life. She had a remarkably good life in that at the end of it, when she came down with the cancer, she started to do things from the heart. And she had a transformation of being a person who didn't always question and argue, but that she did things for the sake of love and for the sake of feeling. And so she not only used her mind well all of her life, she was able to get beyond it by the end. And that was a big step, because that means she's opening in her next life for doing something much, much better. Catalysts. Probably the best catalyst that you can see is from literature, and it's literature that probably everybody in this room has read. Gandalf is a catalyst. Gandalf in the Ring series never, only once or twice when he's fighting with an extremely evil being, does he ever take action. But whenever he's around, just his very presence has other people doing things and thinking things and saying things they wouldn't say otherwise. And that is a mercurial kind of person. Although most mercurial persons that are catalysts are people that are a little bit more instigatory than that. They'll try to instigate anything. At one time, I was meant to be a catalyst type of person. I was, when I was young, as skinny as a rail. You know, the wind could blow me away kind of thing. And I was kind of a passive guy. But people used to like to take me to bars because I could start fights. Communicators. I have a lot of communicants. I have email pen pals, and I have paper mail pen pals. I have a friend. She's now, must be 20 years old, and she grew up without a father. And her mother said to her, if you want to have a father figure in your life, you're going to have to start writing letters. And so she started writing letters. We wrote letters all the way through from junior high school, all the way through high school. And I hardly ever see her, but a friend for life. But it's a communication. It's someone that you can say things to yourself by saying it to them, somebody that is, you know, in the process of verbalizing something you understand and know yourself. Some people even think that the other person solves your problem for you, but it's just that they're the ear there that is drawing you out and allowing you to consolidate your thoughts. Some commentators or communicators are gossips and slanderers. I've got enough of that in me. I'm not a slanderer, but I do know how to use gossip. And if people are sticking their nose too much in my business, I make sure that I start a false rumor about myself. I don't consider it really unethical, because if people are going to do that, you know. I'm leaving all of my mercurial ways in some ways. Curiosity awakeners. That is somebody who always has an engaging topic, which we'll go back and forth on. This is one of my curiosity awakeners right here. I think it's about 35 years we've been going back and forth on some topics. And he's always, to me, he's one of the most curious minds I've ever met in my life. He always has a different way of thinking about things. And he'll come back with something that's said tonight, and he'll say, well, did you mean this, or could it possibly this way? And he'll be like, I've never known anything like that before. Sometimes it's literary figures. I've had several literary figures that awaken all kinds of curiosity. One of the people that I'm reading right now, Plotinus, is a tremendous curiosity awakener. And then people let, one of my friends is a museum friend. And we go to all different kinds of art shows. Any kind of art you can think of, you know, primitive, you know, art from ancient Indians and things like that. And we start talking about things, and we open up the curiosity for each other. And it's just amazing what happens when it comes out of those things. Salespeople in your life. I happen to have Mercury in the Sun opposite Uranus, and I have a hard time with salespeople. Colors. We're talking only about the outer physical colors here. All violets and purples are ruled by Mercury, especially low saturation, high whiteness. Things like a lavender or mauve, things like that. Metals, quicksilver. It changes or communicates itself to every metal very rapidly. It's heavy, it's fluid, it's difficult to contain, very difficult to contain. And it quashes emotion. As the mind sitting on top of the desire body can put it in control right away. But people who take mercury become less emotional. Phosphorus is a mercury element. Phosphorus is the light bearer. And in the body, the phosphates or the phosphorus compounds facilitate thinking. It's a very fiery thing. Some people even believe that it's responsible for second wind, that when you're not getting enough from your lungs, that some of the phosphates break down and release the oxygen and you get extra oxygen that way. It's very much associated with the precipitation of color in your, if you want to have flowers that really are vivid, put a lot of phosphorus with them. People who grow those prize dahlias for dahlia shows, they use compost that's made of human hair because it's got a lot of phosphorus and it's got all the trace elements and it gets quite something. Iodine, a neutral regulator. In fact, it's so neutral that it's flimsy, and with all the chlorine and fluorine that we take in, we kill our bodies because we lose the iodine that we need. Trees, plants, herbs, and foods, nut trees. Because they have those fine oils and because they're very rich in phosphorus, very rich in assimilable phosphorus. There's another tree that has the mercurial kind of stimulation in a really interesting way, the eucalyptus tree. Is a mercurial tree. Parsley has that fresh, airy quality about it. Quite a few members of that family have mercurial qualities. All herbs that promote memory, such as rosemary, and all herbs that are nervines, together with Saturn, some of the sedatives. And together with Saturn, some of the anodynes. And all herbs that are carrier herbs that are used for transporting other qualities. The planetary emissary. We're saying that there are archangels who will, from each of the planets, that will help us with our problems, especially the problems of that planet, if we apply to them. The way it is done is you take a time that is sacred to that planet and you ponder on the question in life. In this case, it would be a problem like, how do I deal with my nervousness? Or how do I communicate this fact to this person because it's very hard to get something across to this person? What you would do is on Wednesday, which is Wotan's Tag, Wednesday is Mercury's day, at sunrise, which is, the first hour after sunrise, is the Mercury hour. And if you invited an interaction with Raphael, and Raphael is the planetary archangel for Mercury, and had an internal dialogue, you would be communicating with Raphael through the Raphael within yourself. We're not talking about channeling or mediumship. We're talking here something more like sympathetic vibration. Everything that's in the greater cosmos is in the internal inner cosmos, and so the you can get answers to things like that. I used to do a lot of that. I used to do it primarily with Jupiter, and I had very good results with that. I went through I guess you could say some of my early days of spiritual seeking were Jupiter days. In physiology, speech, the capability of using the larynx, all of the senses in general, but most especially hearing. Mercury rules all nerves and nervous functioning and the manner in which nerves work. Mercury is so dominant in my chart, and it's not perfect, so I can see that I'm going to have enormous amounts of pain in my life from conditions with the nerves. The arms, the hands, the fingers, and all the dexterity of them. There are more nerves between the brain and the hand than between the brain and any other part of the body. The right cerebral hemisphere. The New Agees like to think of the right cerebral hemisphere as being ruled by the moon, but that's New Agees. The left cerebral hemisphere is ruled by Mercury, by Mars, and the right by Mercury. This is why the stimulation of imagination to complete thought is what is done from the right hemisphere. The thyroid gland, which is a regulator of metabolism. Mercury is a stimulator. If you want to understand each of the planets, one of the best things you can do, since each of the planets rules one of the major endocrine glands, and there are people who have hyperactive endocrine glands, and then they become types. There is a pituitary. There are several different types of pituitary types. There is the giantism, and there is the mystic, and each of them, if you see a person that has a hyperactive endocrine gland, so much so that they become a type, that type is like the planet that rules that gland. And that's a great way at somebody else's suffering from their own extremism, but it's a great way to learn the characteristics of each of the planets. The intestines, especially the small intestines, the discriminatory ability, the tempo, all of that is controlled by Mercury through the small intestine. The lungs, the exchange principle. Oh, I never fixed up that handout sheet. I'll do that and have it ready on Friday. That'll be more incentive for people to come on Friday. We'll meet Friday at 7:30. Yeah. It is a social planet, a human planet, especially in a rational sense. Sociability or socialization brought about through communication. It's a variable in that it can be either positive or negative or masculine or feminine, though sometimes it is a precipitator and sometimes it is an exciter. It's a variable in another way to a nocturnal. Mercury sometimes is nocturnal because it's so much outshone by the sun. It's morally neutral. It can almost be called it. Oh, I'm sorry. I got chalk in my nose. It's neutrally moral. In fact, it could even be called amoral. It is a personal planet, meaning it is an internal planet inside the orbit of the sun. Mercury, Venus, and the moon are called personal planets because they are the first planets that are brought under personal control of the self. Yeah. Oh, inside, yeah, between us and the sun, I'm sorry. It has no planetary opposite. But it does have many affinities with Pluto. In fact, Mercury was the only planet that could go into the underworld. Mercury rules Gemini and Virgo. And this is where that all-important rulership comes in. For example, I have Virgo on the ascendant. And Mercury is in the third house. My body comes alive when I start communicating. I can be in a really passive, quiet state. And it is through my outer personal presence that I choose to communicate. I'm not somebody that is going to be a writer completely. It is I have to personally interact with the people with whom I'm going to communicate. Mercury, suppose you had Gemini in the 11th house, it would indicate friends who were very mental in nature and very changeable and perhaps fickle. But if it was in the 8th house, you would have to be very, if Mercury was in the 8th house and Gemini ruled the 11th house, you'd have to be very careful because you couldn't trust your friends with your secrets. And all kinds of secrets would develop between yourself and your friends. If Mercury was Gemini was on the cusp of the 9th house, or even Virgo was on the cusp of the 9th house, it would be some kind of mental religion or philosophy, like science of mind or something of that nature. And if Mercury was, say, in the 12th house, it would be somebody who tried to ponder in retreat the religious meanings of things. So there's always that relationship that wherever Mercury is, it affects Virgo and Gemini. And whatever happens in Virgo and Gemini affects Mercury no matter where it is in the horoscope. Because if you don't get that into your mind as a possibility, you're never going to succeed in astrology. Because there are so many things with empty houses, so to speak, because there are no direct influences with planets being right in the house, that in order to understand those houses, the only way you can do it is through the indirect rulership quality. Detriment, Mercury has its detriment in Sagittarius and Pisces. That is to say, it doesn't like those big, broad ideas. It wants facts. It wants distinct knowledge. The ideas you can't treat as well as you can exact percepts, or that you can treat as exact quanta of knowledge. Mercury not only rules Virgo, it has its exaltation there. And it is one of the only places that Mercury has a character of its own, and it really is a servant character. Many years ago, when Western Union used to be Western Union yet, there was a Western Union office downtown, and the man who ran that Western Union office was the perfect Virgo type of person. The shape of the body and everything else, and he's really, you know, like, can I serve you? Can I help you? And all that, they're perfect like that. Mercury has its fall in Pisces. It does not like functioning in a realm of belief. It feels best where there's distinct knowledge. When Mercury is in the east, that is anywhere in the first house or halfway up into the 12th house, the person is more likely to be a little bit leaner and a little bit taller, but not exaggerated in either. The person is likely to be quick and facile and agile, and sometimes it may even have a nervousness about it. Mercury in the first house especially is very precocious, but because it does things so quickly, Mercury in the first house, genius is not usually long-lived. The most precocious of geniuses often do not make it long in life at all. Mercury in the east has quick, sparkly eyes and a tricky little grin. I don't know how to describe it. We don't have anybody like that in the class here. It has a very regular set to the eyebrows, and it has a very level-headed expression and carriage of the head. And it's very gesticulative, very talkative. Mercury in the east usually darkens the complexion, no matter what the genetic background. And the hair is usually thin and fine. The face is a little bit elongated, especially the forehead. And that's about it. Any questions? I'll see you on Friday. Works. Mental service.